The scandal surrounding the actions of the UK Post Office in connection with wrongful persecution of sub-postmasters is rarely off the news lately. On Agenda this evening, corporate investigator Rob Kinraid explains how to prevent things going so badly wrong.
Expol was set up in 2005 and we've just celebrated our 19th anniversary. So we're heading into our 20th year of trading. The company was founded in 2005 by Dave Bell, my now former business partner. And I joined him at the beginning of 2007. And we've sort of stuck true to our values, really. We were ex-career detectives in the Isle of Man Constabulary. And initially, when we set up life as Expol, we carried out investigations for criminal defence lawyers on the Isle of Man. And it spread out from there. But we have stayed true to ourselves. The company's now split into three. We carry out investigations, which include many due diligence investigations now for businesses. We run specialist training courses such as anti-money laundering and internet investigation and GDPR. And a big part of our business now, which we developed in about 2008, 2009, was employment screening. And it's quite exciting times for us at the moment because we're in the process of developing some software to assist us with employment screening, and that should be launched in April this year. So a number of companies on the island now use us, and in the UK, it's, as I said, it's a major part of our business. So when the prospective employee makes their application to a company to join them, that company will then contact us, provide us with the job application, provide us with the CV, and we go through it thoroughly and look for any gaps or anomalies and take it from there. So as opposed to just providing a criminal record, for instance, or a member of a busy, under pressure HR team examining the CV, we go through it in details. We look for gaps, we look for things that just aren't right. And it's amazing what we do find.
Okay, and in terms of the sort of work that you actually do, I imagine it's not like we would see on the telly with the kind of the private investigator type firms and all the high drama that goes on. There's an awful lot of sitting diligently, poring through computer screens, looking for things that don't just quite look right.
Absolutely. I mean, when we set up, we wanted to get away from the tag of private investigator. Clearly, we can't fully get away from it, but we're corporate investigators. We do a lot of work for businesses, for a lot of the corporates, for numerous companies on island. And it was essential to us, for our image, for our brand, that we were classed as corporate investigators. If people now look at private investigators, they tend to think of phone hacking and dubious activities like that. It's absolutely something that we wouldn't touch with the longest barge pole ever. Hmm. We would just absolutely put the phone down on anybody that came with an inquiry like that. So it was important for our image that we were classed as corporate investigators.
Okay. So part of the reason that you're here is the rather scandalous is probably the word, isn't it? Actions and activities that went on regarding the post office in the UK. How could a thing like that happen? I mean, it seems to everyone who's watched the ITV programmes or read the reports in the media, that this is the kind of thing that surely to goodness people should have spotted and done something about at a much earlier stage.
Absolutely. I was hooked on the three-part drama about Alan Bates. It was an absolutely incredible story, and I just couldn't get enough of it. And from then on, it sort of took over a bit of our life at work, really, and we couldn't stop talking about it. And then we issued this release about how on earth could have happened. And that's the question people must ask. How on earth could 550 plus postmasters and postmistresses who had up until then been 100% trustworthy suddenly become criminals? And this is the whole point. Nobody has applied the common sense at the time to suddenly say, why have the numbers suddenly increased from very little to 550-odd postmasters and postmistresses? How have they suddenly become criminals? Where was the common sense? There wasn't, because nobody had applied the human eye. Now, I appreciate things moved on, and we start to get to the bottom of the story, which is protecting brand post office and brand Horizon and brand Fujitsu. But goodness me, this could have been prevented.
I mean, what are the obvious things that you, as an investigator, corporate investigator, would have spotted? With the benefit of hindsight, it's easy to spot these things. But are there things that you would be looking out for, that you would suggest businesses on the island, or indeed departments of government on the island, should be looking out for in this particular case?
Well, I think in this case, the numbers are so extreme that jumped out immediately, didn't it? I've mentioned before about 550 plus postmasters and postmistresses, but the numbers just don't stack up, and that would be the first thing that jumps out at me here, that we've introduced this new software and suddenly we've got all these anomalies. Something's not quite right there, and it's just, in this case, quite a basic game of numbers.
And then in terms of the investigation, I mean, what appeared to happen was that the post office allowed for what they would have described as a thorough investigation into the matter. But that investigation seems to have been thwarted, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. It can't have been right. You have to wonder what was going on with the direction of the investigators. And for years, when I was a cop, it was understood that the post office investigation branch were absolutely exceptional at what they did. But this numbers game has just taken over, and clearly it's we've had the issue now of who's protecting the investigators. For sure, they've had one eye on brand post office and protecting that brand, but things are moving now, and obviously heads are falling.
And of course, the other thing about all of this is that it was a rather foolhardy, as it now appears, or is now very much apparent, to have tried to protect brand post office over actually trying to do the right thing. Is this the sort of thing that you see in other cases in businesses, or is this unique to this post office situation?
I think these set of circumstances are unique because of the numbers. I mean, we've never ever seen anything like it. The numbers are absolutely outrageous, and that should have been the first thing that jumped out to the investigator, is how things have changed with the introduction of software. They didn't apply the human eye to assess what was going on. Did anybody look back and actually check the figures of the new software? I don't know. I mean, I wasn't there, but there's been a big opportunity missed here to seek justice. It couldn't possibly have been right at any stage.
And is this there's a psychology, isn't there, that businesses want to look good as well as be good in the public eye, and it's far more difficult, I imagine, particularly after you've gone a few steps down the road of trying to defend indefensible actions. But even at an early stage, you want to try and defend something. There's a principle. Most businesses now have very clear aims and objectives, mission statements, whatever they want to call them. And the last thing they want to do is admit that actually the mission statement is some distance away from the reality.
We've got to bear in mind that the investigator's role is independent. Whether they're employed by somebody or they're contracted by a company, their role is independent. They are seekers of the truth. They have to follow the evidence. And this is what was lacking here. Clearly, the post office investigators had one eye on what the investigation was, but clearly they failed to apply independence. So there was a process that we used in the police to investigate crimes, and it was applied in major incidents, it was applied in lesser cases, but it was the ABC: accept nothing, believe nobody, check everything. And what did the investigators in their post office fail to do was to apply the ABC. And those rules apply whether in their investigations or whether they're now in the corporate structure. You should accept nothing, believe nothing, check everything. And if that's applied by compliance teams, it gives a head start in trying to gather what is accurate data, what's accurate information, how they can move forward. And it applies a completely independent and thorough mind to the investigation or to the compliance check or the risk check.
So of course, these principles work across the businesses, and particularly businesses in the Isle of Man, because again, the finance industry in particular relies on its reputation being good, because quite frankly, when it's your personal savings or investments that you have, the last thing you want to do is invest it in a company that has a poor reputation.
The good thing is we're in a well-regulated aisle. We work with some very impressive companies who've got some very impressive compliance teams working with them. They are so busy now with the regulations they have to apply that the opportunity for misdemeanors is very small. So it's rare now that we do hear about compliance issues, because the teams are that good and there's such a big role for them. Where we come in is that we tend to deal with the higher end of compliance risk. So we get called in whereby the compliance team can take an inquiry so far, yet they don't feel that they've actually got to the bottom of it. And that's what we tend to do. We come in for fewer but sort of more high-end type compliance inquiries.
And then, of course, the other thing that you do apart from the investigations is the training. Mm. What are the sort of the basic steps that you are looking to get people to find out or learn about when it comes to particularly financial compliance?
So we run various courses for financial teams. Last week we had a full-on week of anti-money laundering training, whereby we go into companies, corporates, advocates' offices, and actually take their anti-money laundering. So a number of the companies will have annual regulations whereby they have to ensure that they have anti-money laundering training every year. So we help them with that. We also last week ran an internet investigation course on a two-day course for a team of investigators. So that was quite interesting as well. But the training side of our business is full on at the moment with this type of training.
I suppose part of what you're trying to instill in people is it a kind of a mindset of, you know, just getting your head into a position where you view things in a particular way, as opposed to these are the rules, but anyone can have a rule book. It's knowing that how to apply it and possibly getting those principles instilled in the way that you think about the role that you undertake, isn't it?
Absolutely right. We take great pleasure in training and working with compliance teams and HR teams and other investigators. And we try and get across our need for detail, our need for independence, our need to seek the truth, our need to follow the evidence. And we feel that if we can get this message across to investigation teams, whether they be compliance or HR, then we feel that their company will be a much safer environment for them to work.
In regard to regulation, I think earlier this year we had the financial, what are they called? The financial, they're not the financial supervision.
The FSA.
Authority, I was going to say, commission. Yeah. One of the charges that they get is perhaps that there's too much regulation in place. Certainly, from a personal customer perspective, the forms and the rules and regulations you have to go through to get a bank account seem excessive, and yet Well, and I believe that from the industry point of view as well, there is that concern raised that there's maybe too much regulation sometimes. Is there a danger that the needle that you are trying to find is getting buried further and further into a larger and larger regulatory haystack?
So personally, my view is that we are a very well-regulated isle, and we've now got that reputation because we had to get away from the good old days of people rocking up onto the island with a suitcase full of cash and going and banking it at one of the banks in Douglas High Street. And those good old days of these characters rocking up have gone, and they've gone because the regulations that are now imposed. Your question about, is there too much regulation? Well, perhaps for the person, the innocent person who is trying to get a bank account, yes, you're absolutely right. The amount of paperwork to open up a bank account is enormous. And it's hard to get that balance, isn't it? You want the regulation, you want the good reputation for the isle, you want a good impression for people to come here, to move here. But the balance has to be that there's paperwork to be filled in. Are the banks, with all the regulations, getting at the right people? Are they getting the money launderers? No, probably not all the time. But I guess there has to be a uniform standard of regulation before we can actually attack the money launderers.
One of the guests that we had on agenda, I think it was about a year ago, possibly a little more now, was formerly a banker working, I think, for Deutsche Bank, and he got his fingers burnt and ended up being prosecuted and this and that, and basically went from poacher to gamekeeper. And one of the points he was saying in relation particularly to personal banking, he said, you know, yes, if you are a relatively lowly person with a relatively small income, you will have a significant amount of work to do to convince a bank that you are a worthy and trustworthy customer. However, if you turned up at a bank with the promise of millions or perhaps even billions of pounds to invest, suddenly the requirements become less onerous, primarily because the managers, if the managers turn down the opportunity to get multi-million pounds invested in this bank, then their bosses would probably be wanting to know why. Is that part of the problem when it comes to regulating money laundering?
Again, I think there's a balance to be achieved. You've got the compliance teams who are looking through the application, trying to work through, is this money legitimate? Is it money that's clean? Is it money that we want? And then, of course, you've got the bosses, as you call them, on the other side, desperately keen for big business and bringing big business to the island. There's a huge balance to be achieved there, and it's very, very difficult. The compliance teams have to be strong, they have to be thorough, they have to be independent, and not pressurised by the need for big business for their organisation. It's a very difficult balance to achieve.
Achieving that balance, presumably this is part of the, I don't know, you tell me, is this part of the thing, the training that you can provide in relation to how to see, presumably regulation has to be complied with regardless, it's how you actually get the balance right between basically putting people off completely and then finding other means of investing their money or spending their money, finding different online banking solutions which perhaps are less secure and less favourable, or whether they if it's too complicated to use an a physical bank, then maybe that online presence is where people end up.
Yeah, it is a balance, isn't it? It's very difficult. What we teach on our courses is for the investigators, for the compliance teams, to thoroughly assess the application, to thoroughly assess the subject, and to get down to the bottom of the source of funds. Where has that money come from? Is it legitimate? Is it clean? How that person then deals with the subject and their bosses who are keen for business, that's not something that we can really assist in. We're teaching people to look for dirty money, really. We're trying to get to the bottom of, is this person legitimate? And that's where the training courses in anti-money laundering and internet investigation come in. But do we help the relationship between the compliance team and the boss who wants the business? No, that's not really something that we can assist in. That's for a strong-minded compliance team member to say, this is not quite right. And that's where we do come in thereafter the training course, where we assist the compliance team, say, we're just not quite happy with this. We think we got to the bottom of it, but we're not 100% sure. Please, can you come in? And that is where we come in, and we have a real deep dive. And it might be that we've got our staff, and bearing in mind we've been in business now 19 years, we've got a global reach to access investigators around the world. And we're regularly working in areas and jurisdictions like Hong Kong, Singapore, South Africa, America. It's regular part of our business. The Expol logo now, hopefully, is getting known globally, and that's what we want. But how we achieve the balance between and the relationship between compliance team and boss, probably not one for us.
And one of the big things that's happening, I think it's this year, isn't it? But certainly shortly, is the visit from Moneyval. And that's certainly exercising government's mind. Is that something that you notice across business, that suddenly everyone's trying to become more certain of their compliance?
Without a doubt. I mean, Moneyval's not my particular subject, but I'm certainly aware fully of, on the training courses, that people are talking about Moneyval. I think actually the visit's next year, right, and that we're working hard in preparation for the Moneyval inspectors to arrive. And clearly the island, and I do say, I keep stressing the point that it's a well-regulated isle, the reputation of Isle of Man PLC, it's essential that Moneyval accept our endeavours to ensure that the island is well-regulated and a safe place to invest. And I would just urge chief executives, business owners, managing directors, to have one eye on the big picture of investing in training. Compliance teams, probably one of the most important role in the business. HR teams, very similar. If they're trained, aware, motivated, enthused, then the opportunities for risk are minimized. And I mean that by, for an HR team, for example, checking a CV, if they're trained, motivated, enthused about their work, then they're more likely to spot that anomaly in that CV. And it's the same for the compliance team member who's looking at an application to invest money on the island. If they're motivated and skilled and trained, then they're going to spot the gap. So if business owners, managing directors, chief executives and the like keep one eye on the training budget and invest now a small amount in training or employee screening, they may well indeed prevent a bigger problem later down the line. One eye now on a small amount, small investment, could pay dividends in the long run.
What do you think? Does protection of corporate reputations need to be done at all costs, trumping common sense? Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. Goramayo, thanks for listening.